All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
On Pilot TV this week, we're getting the willies from Mark Gatiss in the latest Ghost Story for Christmas on BBC Two, hunting down the facts with Truthstorian Ethan Hawke in The Lowdown on Disney Plus, and swanning about with Texan High Society in The Hunting Wives on ITVX. Plus, Paul Bettany and Will Sharp join us on this week's show to chat all things Amadeus. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and the last, we should say, regular Pilot TV of 2025, which means this is our Christmas episode. Deck the halls, ding-dong merrily on high, all of that stuff. Festooned as we are with tinsel and festive thing, this is Boydie's festive Arsenal jumper that he's wearing, isn't it right, Boydie?
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't get more festive than an Arsenal cannon.
Yeah, in black.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Indeed, Kay, on the other hand... has actually pushed the boat out and is wearing a Christmas jumper.
I thought we had agreed to wear our Christmas jumpers, so I dug mine out and I come in and you two have really made an effort.
If it helps, I bought this jumper at Christmas about 10 years ago. Is that enough?
It's blue, it's, yeah.
See, I'm thinking, even for people on YouTube cannot see, like, this whole studio is festooned with Christmas stuff. There's, like, soldiers and a tree and the snow and stuff. But I don't think any of it is visible on the feed. So if it cuts to the wide shot at any point, you'll see it all. But other than that, you're just going to have to imagine. There's baubles and snowflakes hanging from the ceiling. Like, it sounds like I'm making this up. I'm not. It's like we're in fucking Santa's grotto.
Yeah, because this studio is usually used by, I think, is it Magic?
Yes. I mean, it's a kind of magic.
It's a very magical studio today, and it looks
it's very
festive.
Good of you to come in early, Kay, and put all this decoration on.
Well, we had a pact. Yeah, I'm the only one.
We had a pact that no one remembers apart from you, and you have definitely...
Well, I don't want to bring up why you might not...
But you definitely haven't reminded us, at least for, like, I would say 2 weeks, that this was a plan.
I remember last year... we all wore Christmas jumpers.
Did we?
Are you confusing it with a conversation we had 12 months ago? Oh. Is that what's happened?
It's very much connected to a conversation we had a few... to be fair, it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I said, oh my God, let's wear our Christmas jumpers and get in the festive spirit. And then we discussed if we'd had a festive jumper, and you said, oh, have you got like an Arsenal...
Like a festive and then you talked supreme about some, thing.
Yeah. Mm. And then you talked about having...
I've got one vaguely Christmas jumper that I wore for the Traitors launch when I interviewed Claudia this week.
See what he did there?
Yeah, I know. I saw exactly
But that's
what
like, yeah, that's the only even vaguely festive Christmas jumper I had.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm repping Christmas for us both.
Well, I wore my Game of Thrones, my House of the Dragon Christmas jumper last year.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
The only other one I have is a Die Hard one. And Kay would obviously object to that on general principle because it's a film. So,
yes,
no, I would allow it this because it's the festive season.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, this is our last podcast. I mean, I say it's our last podcast. We're recording another Pilot Plus tomorrow. We've recorded a review of the year for the 29th.
Yeah,
we already reviewed the episode that goes out on the 6th of Jan. We've recorded that. That's done. I mean,
I don't understand.
We've done five records this week.
Yeah. Completely out of order.
Order. It's been very confusing.
So,
I almost don't know what's happening.
I mean, when does this one go out?
This one goes out
21st of
on Monday. Yeah. Okay. So this is the first one to go out, but weirdly the last one we've recorded.
Right. Why?
This is going out on my birthday eve.
Yeah, as a present for Kay.
As it's known.
Yeah.
Oh no, this actually not. Out. Actually, when does it go out?
I thought you were about to say, actually not. When's my birthday?
Mine's on the 23rd, actually. I think I got that wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the day before your birthday. He said, trying to do basic maths. But honestly,
a couple of days after your birthday.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
He's being very grumpy about his birthday.
I do this every year. I have like an existential crisis around my birthday. So
it's
I'm just
fine.
Like, I don't want to know.
It's all right.
I am not a number.
No, like, it's going to be fine. I think next year is going to be your best year yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to give him a motivation. Yeah, he's down in the dumps, so I'm trying to cheer him up.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good year for TV, as you will find out in our... Is it 6th or 5th of Jan? I think it's 5th of Jan. The 5th Jan podcast where we do a little preview of a 2026 section. So Kay's looking at me, dude, I don't remember doing that. Yes, we did. So that was a lot of fun.
I vaguely remember
that. Oh, and I made a mistake in it. And genuinely, okay, this is absolutely true. I woke up this morning having realised I made a mistake in that preview because we talked about the Scarpetta show, the Nicole Kidman Scarpetta show. And I said, because we've already got Rizzoli and Isles, and I said, oh, which is the, you know, based on the Kathy Reichs novels. And of course, it isn't at all. It's based on the Tess Gerritsen novels. Yes. Kathy Reichs, of course, is creator of Temperance Brennan, who's like a Scarpetta-like character.
Okay, I take it back. Maybe 2026 isn't going to be your best year yet.
But the thing is, what is wrong with my brain that I wake up 5 days after we record that podcast? I'm like, oh my God, I made a mistake.
Yeah,
that's terrible. I actually woke up in a cold sweat in the last couple of days as well, because in one of the many podcasts that we've recorded already, I talked about how the new Agatha Christie series arrived on my Netflix account. And then I saw this big letter from, you know, they sent a letter accompanying the thing.
Do not tell anyone that you've got this.
Exactly. I was like, oh, well. But
the
then
problem
I forgot,
is, Woody, I have literally...
And I'm now going to mention it again today.
I mean, when did you even say that?
literally just said it again, yeah.
Yeah.
In the hours of pods.
Yeah, I wouldn't
recorded,
even
I didn't
know what podcast that was in. Yeah. I have no idea. No.
Let's just say...
It's a mystery, Boydie.
It's a
mystery.
It's an Agatha Christie-style mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you about this now because it's not technically what I've been watching, but this morning, got up early to watch one of the shows we were previewing, and Darren had given me a sneak preview of the blooper reel.
Oh, here we
go. Hang on, he hasn't sent me the blooper reel.
Should I tell you why? Because obviously I've been very insistent and just saying, because the last blooper reel basically was just bringing me down.
Excellent.
It was a hit piece. It was a hit piece.
I mean,
piece.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, from Darren. Just wanted to get me cancelled with... Well, what he did was he made me reflect on my swearing and my bad behaviour in terms of that. So anyways, so he said he was about to send it to you, but he goes, all right, I'm going to send it. You can have a little listen. And honestly, it made my jaw hurt from smiling so much. It made me laugh a lot because, first of all, obviously, you know, there is a bit of me not being able to say different types of words and you guys coaching me on it. Not even just names, James. It's like actual just
basic
words.
English. Yeah.
But also, the majority of it is you and me.
Oh, God.
Right? Either like it's basically tissing about, right? And us either like bickering, but mostly just setting each other off laughing. And all you just hear in the background is Boyd resignedly sighing, going, okay, guys, should we just get on with it? or going, oh, Christ. Yeah, a lot of that. Oh, dear. Oh, Lord.
Spoilers,
you know,
for the blooper reel.
Yeah, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. So,
okay,
I mean,
good. How long is the blooper reel?
It needs trimming, is what I would say.
Oh, my God. How long was it?
Last year's was 10 minutes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's a little bit longer than that. So I said to Darren, I'm sure James can do some trimming. But in essence, yeah. Yeah, it made me laugh.
Okay,
so.
I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah, so when will that... Is that
that will be the one that goes out on the 29th of December. So that's the last one of this year.
So basically, that's a reward for anyone who makes it through the interminable podcast record that was the year in review. You get that bonus at the end.
It's a long one.
And
then you get 12 minutes of Kate swearing at the end of it.
Yeah, so. No, thank God. That's why I've signed it off. It's not just me swearing.
Oh,
it's
see.
All of us.
Okay.
None of us come out well.
I mean, that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, I woke up this morning. You know, you said you woke up in a cold sweat.
Yeah.
I woke up laughing at... I'm not going to ruin it.
You woke up in a hot sweat.
I mean, yeah, could be. I woke up just thinking about the new the year in review record, which I won't spoil for anyone, but let's just say... Someone on the team completely spoons it.
There will be no discussion of that.
Oh my God, it made me... I woke up because I suddenly remembered
Maybe
it.
Maybe he's done a last-minute re-edit behind our backs.
It wouldn't surprise me, but no, I think...
fixed it,
fixed your incompetence.
It's so funny. Oh, he spoons it.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's not an unfair assessment of what happened. Yeah, it has to be said.
Have
you been watching, Kay?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about Christmas TV because this is going out on the
21st. That's right. So this needs to be a guide to everything that's on
Christmas.
Does it?
Well, not a guide. I've already done that. He's done the guide to Christmas Day, but for me, it's like the guide to what I've been watching, which is around Christmas.
No, I see. Okay. So very specific guide.
Coming up.
Yes.
Stuff coming up.
Yeah, exactly. That listeners might want to tune in to. Okay, first on my list is Finding Father Christmas, and that's on Christmas Eve, Channel 4. And it stars Lenny Rush and James Buckley, and it's a fun, sweet, festive treat. Lenny plays a 16-year-old boy who still believes in Father Christmas, and he wants to prove his existence to his disbelieving dad, played by James Buckley. Also, Stephen Fry's in it. It's got fun cameos, unexpected cameos, I'd say. And yeah, it is heartwarming. So I would recommend that. That's Channel 4 Christmas Eve. Okay, the second show I want to mention, which James won't be interested in, but I don't care, is on Christmas Eve as well. It's on BBC One, and it is the Great British Sewing Bee Celebrity Christmas Special. Now, of note, because Sophie Whelan's taken over as host. As you know, she is fantastic in Alma's Not Normal, creator, star, etc. She's brilliant. And I want to mention Lucy Beaumont, who's on this. I mean, they've got great celebs on it, but she is really good value and brings some left-field creations that are very, very amusing. So that is the Great British Sewing Bee Celebrity Special. Gladiators, another celebrity special.
Have you watched all of these?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I have, because I previewed them.
Wow.
That is on Christmas Day, BBC One. And Joe Wicks is on there. We have Sam Thompson, Vogue Williams, and Nicola Adams.
Bell Radio's Sam Thompson.
Indeed. And it's got a nail-biting eliminator for the ladies. So I think that's fun for all the families. So if you love Gladiators, that's one to tune in for on Christmas Day. Great Christmas bake-off, Boyd. Yes, another Christmas special, Bake Off, wow. Channel
yeah.
4.
Yeah. Now, there's some debate about this one, intriguingly, because some people are calling it the Great Peep Show Bake Off.
It is.
It is. So it's themed around Peep Show, right? But the actual title doesn't mention Peep Show. I had to triple check that, fascinatingly.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not.
For the magazine.
It's not in the title, but it's essentially what it is. It's a Peep Show
originally
reunion.
It was in the title, then they decided to take it out for some. Maybe legal reasons, I don't know. Yes, but it's good, is it?
Yes, it is really good.
Olivia Colman.
Oh, my God. And she's a super fan of Bake Off. So she is like, yeah, she's really going for it. I think she'd happily probably swap her Oscar for a Hollywood handshake.
I imagine, yeah.
Yeah. So that is also a lot of fun. And then the last two things I'm going to quickly mention is Judi Dench, Shakespeare, My Family and Me. Now, as you know, I'm a big Dench fan. That's on Channel 4 on the 27th. And basically, she looks into her family history because one of her ancestors might have met the Bard. And obviously, she's over the moon at that.
Might have.
I don't want to give it away, Boyd. No spoilers here, thank you very much.
Therein lies the tension.
But she is one of our greatest Shakespearean actors. So she, she's obviously thrilled at that prospect. And finally, I want to mention the Celebrity Apprentice Christmas Special. Well, it's two parts, I think. Monday the 29th, 9 o'clock, BBC One.
Yes.
And, oh my God, it's like, yeah, it is.
Sarah Adlon's in that, my friend Sarah.
Yes. Yeah. They go to Lapland. They have to create gingerbread biscuits and do like full TV radio campaign. And these biscuits will be sold at Christmas time. And if you think the celebrities are going to be like, you know, any smarter than the civilians, no. They're still arguing. They're still strong personalities, fallings out, and general doofish behaviour.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned it, because you mentioned, what is it, if a Dame Judi Christmas, because you mentioned the Shakespeare show.
Mm.
But I think even more exciting than that, if I may say, is the Sky Arts Tea with Judi Dench show.
I know.
Come on.
I know, but this I haven't watched it. That's why I didn't. This
sake.
Is the what I've watched, actually.
Oh, okay.
That was not available to me at the time of.
Yeah. I think it is available now, because I watched some of it, and that is literally Ken Branagh having tea with Dame Judi and the two of them just chatting away about their lives and careers. And that's actually fantastic.
Lovey fest.
Yeah, it is a lovey. It is. But they are brilliant on the positive side of loveliness.
Oh, God, yeah.
Not a particularly negative side.
No, exactly.
But they are fantastic. So,
no,
yeah,
that would be
it is a Dame Judi Christmas.
When's that on?
That is on Sky Arts /now on Monday the 22nd of December at 9 p.m. 2025. We're going to stop saying 2025.
I know.
Course, yeah.
James, come on. James,
well, I'm glad
we
got through that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No.
That was a waffle fest. And James has been like just looking at me quizzically.
To your reality TV treat.
I can't even. I mean, it is literally end to end reality TV.
Yeah, I've got one that's going to annoy you even more coming up.
Oh, good.
Good.
So, yeah.
Let's make this.
Do you remember the good old days of the reality check alarm that used to go off when reality conversation breached 30 seconds. Do you remember this? Okay, probably before your time,
Kay. But each of my entries weren't longer than 30 seconds.
We had a total cumulative 30-second reality limit. And when it was breached,
you imposed it,
the reality check alarm would sound.
I wasn't informed of this.
And curtail it.
I wasn't informed. Not only was I not informed of this, but you asked me the question of what have you been watching?
Which was, I recognise in retrospect, that was an error.
Yeah. Foolish.
I do.
Naive. Again, James, but I mean, I did host the launch Q&A with Claudia a week on before the new series of The Traitor, so I've seen the first episode, which goes out on New Year's Day, 8 o'clock. And by the way, I mean, it's on at 8 o'clock, mostly this series, and I think it's a 9 o'clock show. For example, on New Year's Day, the night manager arrives at 9 o'clock.
It has to have that slot.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that for the rest of the run, it needs to be. They're putting loads of new stuff on after. Yeah, I think they're using it almost. It's a surefire hit, The Traitors, and then they're showing other new scripted stuff. So I think the Dawn French show that I interviewed her about, which will be on the podcast soon, I think that's on at 9 after The Traitors as well. But I do think it should be. Traitors in general should be a 9 o'clock show. But with that caveat, the first episode, you said, obviously, it's absolutely strictly embargoed. But there is an absolutely brilliant twist, and it's going to send shockwaves through.
And we know that twist because you've already revealed it on a previous podcast, which hasn't aired yet. It's all very confusing.
Well, except I didn't reveal the full details of the twist, even on that episode.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I didn't. I alluded to the fact.
Well, it was more twisty than what you told us.
Yeah, I didn't tell you. Because I don't think.
You can see the look of panic on Paul's face.
What did I tell you?
What did I say?
Yeah.
I think I mentioned the part of the twist element, which is there's going to be a trailer that goes on Christmas Day.
Right.
Which will reference the twist.
I
won't explain it in full. And I think I did that. I believe I did that. I hope I did that. Without going into detail. So, but the detail is just amazing. It works brilliantly.
Either way, I cannot wait.
Either way, it's fantastic. And there's a Claudia Owl interface. You know, there's always this owl that arrives, James.
What, like Harry Potter?
Yeah, basically, a little bit like Harry Potter, yeah. And she asked the owl to look over the contestants. It's just a lovely little on-running joke.
It sounds a bit silly.
Oh, wow.
It sounds a bit silly.
Do not come for Claudia, please.
Okay. No, but part of the joy of the show is there is room for silliness. And indeed,
owls.
Yeah, the first scene when you see Claudia with the owl is fantastic.
The thing is, if this was happening in some sci-fi bullshit, it would be all over it like a rash.
Yeah. If it was a dragon.
If this was a
dragon, I would be watching the show. Yes.
Then another. Absolutely not in our core purpose of this podcast, so to speak, is Simon Cowell, The Next Act on Netflix.
How many episodes have you seen?
I've seen the whole thing because I'm reviewing it for He Magazine. And it's really interesting because he was a guest on The Rest Is Entertainment. I don't know if you listened to it. The new one episode just came out today as we're recording this on Thursday, the 18th of December, 2025. And they interview him. And it's an interesting interview because they do put some quite challenging stuff to him, like about, you know, the concept of after-show care to the contestants down the years of The X Factor, etc., which is controversial. And he kind of almost, there's moments when he kind of begins to answer stuff and then they kind of move on to other issues. But anyway, because he's mainly answering listeners' questions about his life and career. But anyway, this show is from the people who do Need for Speed, you know, that Formula One.
The popular PlayStation game, obviously.
Oh, okay. And the very, very popular Formula One show on Netflix. And it's a weird kind of combination of... It is a bit built on a search for a boy band. So he's trying to create a new boy band. He has, in fact, created, spoiler alert, a new boy band. They're called 10th of December or December 10th, one of the two.
Also known as Boyd's Birthday Boxing Day.
Exactly, yeah. And so you see the whole process of him auditioning and all of that that we kind of used to seeing back in the day in on all those shows. And still, of course, Britain's Got Talent will be back this year with him on board as judge still. But it's also a kind of reality show, like a verite, like a kind of Kardashian slash whatever style you know, Need for Speed, as in you get to see the Formula One racing drivers and their teams, and it's got a behind the scenes documentary thing going on all the way through, and you see more of him and his partner and son.
I watched the first episode. It's very interesting, their dynamic.
Yeah. And his son's in it a lot. His 10-11-year-old son,
Eric,
and you just see his kind of daily life in his various homes around the world. Like, he's got in London, in LA, in wherever, and just from that point of view, if you're interested in him as a figure, as I know James is,
James, he has half a crumpet for lunch,
yes,
and half a crumpet for
exactly.
dinner.
Exactly,
that is the
same crumpet.
Yeah. Cuts it in half, has it for breakfast, and then he'll come back to it and have it
later for
lunch.
Savagery.
But what I was going to say was, it's quite funny because there's various moments where he decides to do things that backfire, like. There's a bit where he puts up a poster in Elephant and Castle, which is very much in my ends. And she says, "Elephant and Castle, what's that?" And he's like, "It's an area." And then hardly anyone's bothered or interested. Mm. He thinks putting up a poster in Elephant and Castle is going to have people flocking to his new venture is beyond me. And at various times, at first it looks like there's proper jeopardy that not enough people are going to know about this thing, even though it does all these radio interviews, etc. And he seems genuinely worried about it. There seems genuine jeopardy. But in the end, it all kind of, spoiler alert, I mean, he has created a boy band. But what I was going to say was, I'm thinking, you know, this is very slick and, you know, interesting and very well made. And I'm still always been interested in Simon Cowell, you know, been writing about him for like most of my professional career, last 20, 25 years or whatever. But in the end, it still ends up being really moving and emotional just because that rejection of some of, so it takes like 16 young men to LA or Miami or whatever for the final stage in the process where he's got to whittle them down to the band, right? And it's just devastating, you know, to these kids who get that far into the process, but then they're finally rejected. It's really distressing.
I'm interested to see if there's still an appetite for this because I watched the first episode and that's his, at the core of it, right?
Yeah.
Which is that he wants to know if he's still got it. And it'll be interesting to see how successful this is.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's already doing really well, so I believe, on Netflix. But it's very quite a clever title as well, because it's the next act for him, his next act, as in what he's doing next, and it's finding a new act.
James, do you see what they did there?
Genius.
I reluctantly see what they did there, yes.
Anyway, and there's also a really moving bit about Liam Payne in there as well, which is devastating. So anyway, that I started up being a bit cynical about it and thinking, oh, this is... Like, there's one bit where he goes to Liverpool and he explains about the Beatles. The Beatles came from Liverpool. They're like the best British pop act ever, really. And I'm like, yeah, we don't need you explaining who the fucking Beatles are. Thanks, mate. But in the end, I was won over. And I have to say, I found it really interesting and kind of moving and weirdly devastating. And I wanted to mention this. So the Agatha Christie show that I mentioned before, Seven Dials, that I have watched, that we hopefully will be reviewing pending embargo details soon.
The one that you violated a legal agreement to disclose, that one.
I think I'm allowed to say that I've been able to see it now, I think.
Let's hope so. Otherwise, boys not coming back for 2026.
But I've had a real Agatha Christie week because I watched that, and I won't say what I thought of it, but we'll hopefully review it. And then I watched them. I went to see The Mousetrap for my birthday. It's part of one of my birthday week treats with my mate. And
did you not know how it ended?
No, I've never. Have you seen?
I've been to The Mousetrap. Yeah.
Right. So
I've
there,
been. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this bit at the end, in case you don't know.
Where don't
oh
under
my God,
any circumstances spoil
joking?
The Mousetrap.
How can you look crestfallen at that?
Oh my God. I'm
about to.
You idiots. Well, I'm not going to give away the ending.
Because they do a specific thing at the end where their cast comes out and they literally say to you.
That's what I was going to say.
Do not spoil the ending.
And it was actually directed to Boyd.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And they said, look, when I went, actually, they said, if Boyd Hilton is in the house, it is really important.
Shut up. The utter morons. What I was going to say was, at the end of it, yes, the cast come out and say, please don't spoil the ending.
Boyd Hilton.
Which is in itself a fun moment. Anyway,
it is, yeah.
What I was going to say was, I had an initial nightmare time because we went to the restaurant very near, if not opposite.
Just say the Ivy.
The Ivy.
We know it's the Ivy.
The original Ivy, right? Now they've got loads of chain restaurants, but the original Ivy, which is the kind of showbiz capital, back in the day of all restaurants, the kind of people Cilla Black would be there all the time with, you know.
That was an interesting way to go. I was thinking, what celebrity you could use, and you landed on Cilla.
Well, I associated with Cilla.
Old school.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. We booked a table for like 5:45, and there's this like queue of people waiting to get in.
What?
Yes, to the Ivy.
You didn't have to wait outside, Boyd.
Had to wait.
No.
But get
not
this
with
as
the
well.
Riffraff.
But get this as well. People were waiting half an hour, 40 minutes for a table
even
that they'd reserved.
Booked.
Yes, exactly.
That doesn't make sense.
Did you not say, A, I'm Boyd Hilton, B, it's my birthday?
Mad, right? So obviously it's really busy. It's in the run-up to Christmas. I mean, it's not even that close to Christmas. It's in the run-up to Christmas. But you've taken these bookings and you're not. And people were like getting absolutely furious, quite rightly, standing. And I was like,
did you kick off?
I kind of kicked off.
Did you go and say, excuse me, do you listen to the Pilot TV podcast?
Well, I didn't say that.
I think we know the answer to that.
But I did. Do you remember in Planes, Trains and Automobiles, there's a bit where Steve Martin has to explain what reservation because he's reserved a car or something. And, you know,
like, is that what you wanted to do?
You didn't do that, did you?
There's another scene in Seinfeld where he also, he's like, I have reserved a car. I was like, it's a reservation for a specific time. I had to say it to one of the people.
This is the most showbiz story you've told in the
But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Like, no, I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait half an hour probably for a table. So we had to go somewhere else, just leaving us in the air.
Presumably, they've underestimated the time people would spend having their meals, and it's obviously it's like a doctor's service, had a roll on
event. Completely, yeah. But like, it's not
that's
like
a shame, though, for people who've booked in advance for a special
especially
occasion.
The kind of people who go to the Ivy, but I suppose the kind of people who go to the Ivy are not the kind of people you can say, get the fuck out. If you're in Nando's, you have to say you're welcome, they'll probably just sling you through a window. But,
but honestly, there are a lot of disgruntled people ahead of me as well. It was massive.
I mean, it's not too bad for you because you're there quite a lot, but I mean, for people who have had
it's like Norm in Cheers, because everyone goes,
If only it was, but sadly not. Yeah, it was absolute madness.
Aww,
yeah.
Do you want to know something, Boyd?
Yeah.
I too have once eaten at that Ivy.
Yeah.
Before
was Silver Black there?
No, but Jerry Hall was on the table next to us.
Oh, how fabulous.
But I went there before I went to see A Life in the Theatre with Joshua Jackson and Patrick Stewart.
Oh, wow.
That must have been 15 odd years ago.
Yeah.
I got Joshua's autograph outside of that.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to see it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I still have that saying.
Anyway. Oh, maybe Biggins. I think he's the other person I would associate with.
Oh, really old school.
Old school show.
Christopher Biggins.
People. Yeah.
If your idea of a celeb spot is Christopher Biggins.
No, I'm saying particularly in that Ivy.
Back in the day.
Because it's so theatrical. It's like, you know, because it's right in the middle of London's West End theatre land. next to, of course, the Mousetrap, which I enjoyed a lot more. Luckily, we managed to get a table at another nice restaurant. But yeah, I was absolutely...
Anyone who was like waiting with bated breath, worried about where Boyd ate.
Did Boyd manage to get into the Ivy, or was he forced
to
slum it?
Yeah,
as
luckily, I didn't slum it anyway.
It was Nando's, wasn't it? You did get it, Nando's.
No, it wasn't.
Don't you not Nando's?
It's good for vegetarians like Boyd.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's chicken, isn't it? So you'd be fine.
Yeah,
indeed. very funny. Anyway, that was my disappointing start to my birthday celebration.
Wow.
But luckily, it all came around in the end because of the Mousetrap, because it was so much fun.
And Paul McCartney, didn't you see McCartney that day as well?
That was earlier in the week. That was a screening of the new Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney.
The new Macca documentary, which is going to be on Prime Video in February, I think, which was 2 hours of utter joy if you're a Paul McCartney fan, as I am. And that was fantastic. Yeah, I did do that.
Anyway, enough of what Boyd's done to celebrate his birthday. James, what have you been watching?
Nothing. I've watched nothing. Literally nothing. And the reason is because I've just been watching the shows for the various pilots that we've been recording. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's not strictly true. I've watched all of Welcome to Derry, but I definitely mentioned that on one of the podcasts. I don't even know if it's one that's been out, but obviously the finale of that happened. And the big reveal, no spoilers, is that there's going to be more of it. There's going to be that. It's Welcome to Derry Chapter 1. It's going to be another Chapter 2, possibly a Chapter 3. Also, I've seen all of Pluribus. I have finished Pluribus.
Oh, yes.
The finale does not air until Boxing Day. Boydie, not Christmas Day, but Boxing Day.
I know.
The 26th of December. Just making sure you don't get it wrong.
You don't have to tell
just
me.
Just making sure you don't get it wrong.
Did you know, I was going to message you because did you see what other Apple TV show had dropped onto our previews website thingy?
I know about Your Friends and Neighbours.
No. The last two episodes of Hijack.
Oh, have they? Last time I checked, they weren't there.
Oh,
okay,
they are
that's
now.
Exciting. Robert Frost has done it. He's finished them.
Exactly.
Thanks, Robert.
Exactly.
That guy always delivers.
Yeah, that's exciting. Okay, great. I'm going to watch those later on. That I'm pleased about. That's my evening sorted. So that'll be what I am going to be watching this evening. I finished Pluribus.
I'm keeping the finale of Pluribus. For some reason, to
watch it live.
No, Christmas Day. No. I'm going to watch it pretty much as soon as I get home tonight. But did it work? Did it stick the landing?
Well, see, the thing is, and this is why I was asked that exact same question when I came into the Empire office. Did it stick the landing? To which I said, no, because there is no landing.
Well, okay,
like it's an ongoing
It'll
thing.
Carry on,
there is no landing. And sure. I think that's important. It's an ongoing concern. So the flight continues without turbulence, is what I would say. If we're using aviation metaphors,
okay.
So yeah,
but I did not disappoint.
No, it did not. Disappoint. Okay. In fact, I had a big old smile. Didn't crash and burn. Yes, I very much enjoyed it. Pluribus is wonderful. And you can hear more about our thoughts on Pluribus when we talk about it in our Review of the Year special, which will be going out next week.
Roti.
Yes, roti.
Yes, roti.
The roti special.
Yeah.
But I honestly think I'm starting to realise one of the reasons why I haven't watched more this week, because you, Kay, even though you've watched absolute drivel, have watched a heroic amount of it, which is very impressive, is that I got my PlayStation Wrapped was sent to me. And I posted this on my Instagram yesterday, but I am going to read it out here because I'm going to name and shame myself in doing this. I got my... And this is just the PlayStation. This is not the only...
Is this a new section we're incorporating into the podcast?
This is not the only console
I've been
I
playing.
Owned.
Fine.
But my PlayStation Wrapped said hours played... PlayStation in 2025.
Is this a day?
469 hours.
What?
A month?
Total, for the year. For the year, not a month. Gosh. I mean, even I'm not that much of a maniac. 469 hours.
That's a lot of hours.
Given the amount of stuff
that
I watch.
How?
Right.
I mean, people ask me how I watch so much TV, but you're watching lots of TV and you're doing that.
469
Although, to be
hours.
Fair, he's never going out.
This is true. I have no social life.
You have to go to screenings and stuff.
Maybe I'm playing games and screenings as well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, 409. Specifically, 158 hours playing Elden Ring Night Rain, which was my number one game of the year. And I'm still obsessed with it because the DLC dropped recently. And actually, this wrapped, I've probably put in another 20 hours since this was done. Claire Obscure Expedition 33, which was my game of the year. I did 82 hours on that.
Just note that I'm trying really hard to look interested in this.
I did 46 hours in Ghost of Yotei. I did 39 hours on Baldur's Gate 3, and I know what you're thinking, that's actually not a lot, but yes, that's in addition to about the 170 I did in that game the year it came out. This was just replaying Chapter 1, and then 27 hours on Elden Ring, the original Elden Ring, which again, I would start again. 469 hours.
I mean, it's
so. If you ever wonder why,
James, I urge you.
I haven't watched as much.
Let 2026 be the year that you go and get some fresh air.
Yeah, I'd need to get outside more.
Yeah, definitely.
I think because you know that in and of itself, 469 hours is maybe not the end of the world. But then if you add that to the sheer volume of TV that I have watched over the last year, and then the number of films I've watched for the Empire podcast, which admittedly is a lot,
and also
less than
the number of hours of shows that you're rewatching.
I mean,
like a maniac.
I think you overstate that.
I don't think I do. But anyway.
I rewatched The West Wing this year, obviously, again. But did I rewatch anything else? Oh, yeah, The
Night Manager.
But other than that.
Yeah, there are other.
That's about it, isn't it?
Well, you always throw in, you know, random episodes.
That is true. I'll occasionally go, oh, I've just rewatched a random show that I pull out the air. Yeah, that is true. Okay.
Can I just correct myself?
Yeah, always.
I said, as I was saying, I thought, this isn't right, is it? I was talking about the Simon Cowell documentary being made by the people who made the Formula One documentary, Need for Speed.
And that's actually a lie.
No. The title is Formula One Drive to Survive.
That's what I thought.
Not Need for Speed. You should have corrected me.
No, it wasn't that I thought you'd... I just thought, oh, they've made another show.
No.
Drive to survive.
Need for Speed, Drive to Survive.
Right, it's much the same thing.
Same.
Speed, of course, being a video game franchise
a
terrible film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there we go. No need to re-edit.
No, Boydie's happy to own his mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Professional.
Okay, should we have a listener question?
Yes, let's. It's a message from Lucy who says, wishing you all a Merry Christmas. My question is, what non-Christmas TV shows do you prefer to watch while wrapping your presents? Mine has always been Father Ted, but recently it's been superseded by Alan Carr's Changing Ends. I think it's the mix of feel-good and nostalgia that makes it so good for this. I think your podcast has been even better than ever this year, and I will be listening regularly in 2026.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well, so it has to be a specifically non-Christmas themed show.
That's what Lucy says, but I think... I mean, I've got an answer ready.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Because my answer was that... we are going to review The Night Manager, the new series, 5th of Jan episode of the pod. And I did a James. I rewatched because I remembered that I hadn't actually finished.
What?
I know, insane.
Jesus
I know. Let's
Christ.
Not get into that. But anyway, let's skip over it. Let's just say I did a rewatch.
Wow.
But because it's so super duper dense, the only way I could do it was if I was wrapping presents at the same time.
Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
That's so counterintuitive. Mm. It's so complicated that you have to be doing something else while you're watching it.
Well, James, I didn't find it complicated. But
you just said it was really dense.
No, tense.
Oh, I thought you said dense.
Oh, did
I say dense?
I think you
did say
dense.
Oh, if I did say dense,
I was something else.
Oh, if I did say dense, I was being dense.
Right.
I meant tense. Yes. It was so extraordinarily tense that I couldn't.
Did you watch it in a tent?
In a tent, yeah. That's exactly what happened. But no, so if I was rapping and doing something with my hands and looking down occasionally, it just made it easier for me to watch.
This is probably how I would get through cringe comedy. By wrapping presents while watching it.
Yeah.
Or pruning a tree.
Or pruning a tree. Yeah. Or painting the ceiling. Mm. I in the past, have watched both Supernatural and Gilmore Girls while wrapping presents. And the reason is because they were shows back way back when that were on my sofa list, and I didn't really care enough about them to focus.
I imagine with Gilmore Girls that they were scenes where they were wrapping presents.
Almost certainly wrapping presents, yes.
Where they wrap beautifully. Yeah, beautifully.
Yeah, so, it's one of those.
Yeah, that's probably a good good.
Yeah, so guidance. So normally it would be something, because I'm going to be doing something else while I'm doing it, it'd be something that's on my sofa list that I don't really care about, which I'm like, I can just
But you just want to tick off your list.
I just want to tick off the list. It'd be something like that.
Well,
yeah.
Listen, I just want to say I did want to watch The Night Manager, and obviously it deserves full attention.
It does.
Just that I cannot handle the level of stress in that first series. Yeah, mm.
The tense, dense Night Manager.
Yeah. Yeah. Seen in a tent or a den.
That shows you how tired I am.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We should say we are all three of us absolutely just dead on
God.
Our feet.
I genuinely, this morning...
I just
morning,
don't go on bang on about it like you two do.
No, as I mentioned, this week's been very... I woke up this morning, I thought, I don't know if I've got the words for the podcast.
I mean, we will obviously have cut it out, but there was a little bit earlier on in this podcast where you literally lost the ability to form one.
Well, oh, my God,
I don't know why we have to drag out this fact. This just won't have heard it.
I know, but it was quite funny.
No, it was. I came in saying, oh, my God, this week I've done, like 30 previews, 5 podcasts, 2 interviews, and, like, script homework, all this stuff. I list all the stuff, and I said, I don't know if I'll be able to talk. And then for the first 10 minutes, we spent... re-recording everything because I literally couldn't get a word out and then got hysterical.
It was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it was. That's not going on the blooper.
I mean, you say that.
Hideous.
Anyway, while I'm wrapping presents, I will be watching Alan Curb. Partridge and the most recent one I think I watched, which I've mentioned another of our like 7 million podcasts that we've recorded this week. I can't remember which one. Oh no, it was the review of the year. I talked about how the new most recent Alan Partridge series I've watched like 2 or 3 times already, maybe even 4 times. I'll watch it again while I'm wrapping presents for sure.
I thought it would have been Curb. Interesting.
Well, Curb I just watch on... I watch that probably as often as he watches Friends and etc. But I just don't bang on about it. I don't mention it. I don't need to mention it.
You don't like to bang on.
It's part of the general fabric of my life. And in fact, I felt very Larry David-esque at the Ivy incident when I had to point out what reservation was.
Were you wearing slacks?
I think I probably was wearing slacks, yeah. Yeah.
This is a reservation, and I am Boyd Hilton. What are you doing?
No, it wasn't like that.
No.
I think it didn't sound like Larry David either.
I don't know who that sounded like. Yeah. Lord Grantham, possibly.
Maybe that's who you're going for. Mm.
Okay, well,
what's the weekend?
That's the question answered. Mm. Thank you, Lucy, for getting in touch and for listening.
Thank you. Yes. I don't even... Literally, if you paid me £1,000, I don't think I could tell you what the question was. Oh, I've remembered.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm not going to pay you £1,000.
No, but I mean, if you had, that would be nice. He could just throw it at me from there.
I think now it's news.
Is it news? Yes. Do you know what? I'm actually very pleased that you are here to shepherd me through this, because I've lost the ability to do it. However, you're wrong, because it's time for this week's guests.
Oh, okay. Oh, he's
nice
suddenly
come. Nice try.
Even though I was tired, I was trying to be helpful. You were. Yeah. He's corrected me and suddenly come alive.
That's
through
it.
My correcting me.
One upmanship. I'm back in the room.
Oh, something's never changed.
We reviewed Amadeus last week. You can catch it now on Sky and Now. Now, not just now, but literally now on Now. And this is Joe Botton's adaptation of the Peter Shaffer play and depicts one Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. You may have heard of him, played by Will Sharp, and his rivalry. There we go. Did it.
Well done.
I'm getting
falling
there.
Apart
I'm getting there.
Our
I'm struggling,
eyes
but I'm doing my best. What we should do for the rest of the show, there's going to be no outtakes. We're just going to keep on going. There'll be no
God,
edits.
Don't.
We're just going to plow through.
People will be unsubscribing.
They may well do. But his rivalry with Antonio Salieri, played by Paul Bettany, piano offs abound. And they spoke to Boydie very recently. And this is what occurred.
Paul Bettany and Will Sharp, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. Yes, I am an Arsenal fan. You've noticed, Paul.
Yes, I have.
I'm not wearing it especially for you now, but I'm going to the match later. Are you going later?
I'm not going, but I have packed my kit to wear whilst watching the game.
That's good.
I haven't washed it. It hasn't been washed since we last lost.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And my wife is like, you have to wash that goddamn shirt, and I can't because it's got lucky sweat in it.
Of course, completely. Okay. Yeah. Will, are you a football fan?
No, not really so much anymore. I'll watch like the World Cup or the Euros, but I don't follow the Premier League.
Yeah, fair enough. Because you should say, Joe Barton, who wrote Amadeus, of course,
the genius that he is.
I know. He's a friend of the podcast, and his love of Spurs often gets in the way of...
Right.
normal relationship.
Well, it's so weird as well because he grew up in Brighton or somewhere. Right. It's like you chose that.
Yeah. Misguided.
Like, it's not...
I could totally, yeah.
It could have absolutely avoided a lifelong misery.
Exactly. Have you got a special message for Joe? Yeah, anything to do with...
Come to the dark side.
The bright side.
Yeah, the bright side. London's red, I guess.
Exactly. Talking for Joe's script, right, is I guess key to this whole project, right? Because if you're just doing another version of this story that was a play and a film, fine. But he has found something else in the story. So what do you think he has brought to the script for the show?
Well, I feel like because it's across 5 hours, there's like necessarily more space to kind of explore. You know, we've talked a bit about like the sort of domesticity of these characters and what are they like at home, away from the kind of world of music, and also kind of to explore different points of view. You know, the play, the film, like very much like driven, like almost entirely by Salieri's perspective and his kind of burning envy. And that's absolutely like a big part of this show, but there are other points of view as well, including Constanza's. And so I found that a sort of quite an interesting, you know, part of this new iteration.
Yeah.
I think that's the very reason why I took the job. I wanted to, I loved the idea of playing Salieri. I was a bit frightened by it because F. Murray Abraham's so great. And then I had the Milos Forman movie as a masterpiece. And then I was like, why do this again? And then read the script and realized, oh no, he's asking the question, what does that burden of that genius feel like, you know, because it is a very mono perspective in both the film and the play, is about what does it feel like to not have that genius. And I thought, actually, that's right there is a good enough reason to have a new version. And also, I think that the TV show is, our TV show is quite self-consciously trying to be accessible to a broader audience, and an audience that might normally think, oh, this isn't for me. It's going to make me feel stupid or whatever. And it really doesn't. And sort of to invite a new audience to see something like this.
Yeah, to some extent, there's a kind of bawdiness to it, and it would, which I guess was partly in the film and play, but I think you bring that out particularly in your I mean, if you play this character, I guess you have to have a whale of a time. But is it as much fun to do that role as it's written down, if you like?
I mean, it was definitely fun. Like, there were enjoyable aspects to him, like that he's very impulsive and sort of chaotic in his behaviour. He's very, like, appetite-driven. I enjoyed that sort of animal part of him. And also, you know, it's quite funny sometimes that we talked about, like, is there a sort of neurodiversity to, without getting too specific or trying to retro diagnose him, like he says what's on his mind. If he thinks it's true, it comes out of his mouth, and that often causes offense or hurts Salieri's feelings. Or, you know, that was fun, like that he doesn't really understand society or how you're supposed to like behave appropriately. I mean, there were other parts of him that were, it was still fun, but I would say like there are sort of darker aspects to him as well, and that was like as much a part of him, I felt like, as the kind of like playful, frivolous, you know, boy, man-child. There was also this kind of like, you know, we talked a bit about how Salieri and Mozart almost feel like two brothers to a common father in God. And there was that sort of like darker, as you said, like the sort of like, what's the cost of carrying the burden of that expectation, whether it be from, you know, Constanza, you need to use your talent to make money, or his father, like you need to not waste what we've given you, or from God, where it's like, I'm going to speak through you and that will have a physical and psychological toll, but it's your purpose and duty, you know.
Yeah, that dance really comes out when he goes home, doesn't it, and sees his dad. That's
the beginnings of it, yeah.
And then Salieri is driven mad,
yes,
by God's abandonment, a perceived God, his perception that God has abandoned him and chosen Mozart.
Yeah, he really goes for the debauched kind of anti-Christian way of life. He embraces that, doesn't he?
He sure does.
You both get to do scenes of intimacy, not with each other, but separately. How is that? I mean, you're both experienced actors. How is that, doing that now?
It's those kind of scenes.
Dreadful. Yes,
it's always been dreadful. and it's still dreadful and it's embarrassing and I frankly thought I had aged out of it, but apparently not. What I do like is I think that I feel more comfortable if the scene tells a story.
Yeah.
Whilst I am in the room with the sex worker, even though he's not there, Amadeus is in that room too, and it's actually more a scene about his relationship with him.
And Paul asked me to be there in negligee,
of course,
to help him film
inspiration.
It was
really inspiring.
Good.
I agree. I think so long as you understand what is the story purpose of this scene, that becomes your focus. And the rest of it is basically just making sure everybody is working within the bounds of their comfort. And that it's almost like sort of rehearsing, you know, like any choreographed scene. It's just a series.
If, for instance, that scene, one of the main reasons for it is to show the audience that Salieri has now chosen a life of transgression.
Absolutely.
And so then I go, all right, well, I get it then. Damn.
Yeah.
Because before that, there's a scene of self-pleasure.
Yes.
Which I always think is possibly the most embarrassing thing to have to do.
Also embarrassing.
Yeah, I was there for that scene.
Yes,
I knew it.
I actually brought it back off holiday.
Most of your time was spent as inspiration, clearly.
Sure. Yeah. Could you get more in my eye?
Yeah. Had the two of you met before you embarked on this?
No,
I was obviously like aware of Paul's work and was a big fan, and so I was, you know, slightly intimidated about the idea of us working together. But actually, as soon as we met, it became clear that you're very approachable and very generous scene partner, and so I was relieved to find that actually we were, like, it felt weirdly the more toxic the relationship of our characters
the closer we got
that as
probably
people.
Says more about you and me.
Maybe.
But I had a similar experience. I had admired Will from afar, and then I foolishly watched his Flowers, which he wrote and directed and stars in, and I was super intimidated, and then met him, and it was just lovely. It was really lovely, and I think we work in very different ways, and I think it really those ways really complemented each other. And by the end, I don't know how much of the show you've seen, but by the end of it, the whole thing. Okay, by the end of it, there was a scene that was really, I had no idea how you were going to accomplish it. I mean by telling the story. Forget whether you've done it well. I just didn't know how we were going to tell the story, and. I don't think we would have accomplished it earlier on. I think we just by that point had such sort of I had such trust in him and felt so safe, and he with me. I believe we could go to places that.
I guess it was like those scenes and that scene in particular, it felt like, you know, there were big ideas around what was happening in a sort of stylistic way or sort of like a theoretical way, but actually what was happening on a human level was two men were being vulnerable with each other and honest with each other. And I felt like it required of us like to take, I suppose, like, well, it felt like we needed to sort of take some risks in the playing of it for it to work, and also needed to feel comfortable being vulnerable in each other's company. And I agree, like, that would have been harder to do towards the beginning of the shoot. I also felt Alice Seabright, who directed that episode, handled it really well, and that's how it sort of almost like was distilled down in the end from a almost like magical realist concept to something that was just very simple.
Yeah,
she was great.
It gets very daring and kind of bold. The longer it goes on, the more kind of its own thing it is, I think. It was very different to the previous versions, certainly, yeah. In terms of the music, there's various shots where you're playing the piano and the camera pans up to you and you're clearly actually doing it. So is that part of your skill set anyway, or did you hone up on playing the piano?
No, I had to practice a lot. Like, I could play sort of chordsy. I can Google some chords, some Radiohead chords, and play along to a sort, you know, but I couldn't read music very well and I couldn't play anywhere near, sort of, I couldn't play a Mozart piece. But Ben Holder, who supervised the music, started teaching, coaching me on that sort of, I think about 6 months before we started filming. And so, yeah, the pieces I needed to play, I needed to be confident on. And then sometimes the pieces would change quite soon before we shot them. And thankfully by then I was sort of like, had practiced enough that it would go in a bit quicker, but then I'd forget all of them immediately after we shot. Like I couldn't play you any of those pieces now.
Did you delve into the performing?
I did. I actually spent about 30 hours learning this Mozart piece, and then I sat down at the piano to play it in the scene, and Julian, the director, went, "Oh no, you're not actually playing it. You're imagining it."
Wow.
At which point I went, okay. Yeah.
That's funny.
There it is.
There's a discussion about relatability, I think, particularly with The Marriage of Figaro, which I felt Joe Barton was saying something here about, I don't know, you know, the writing of TV and film and stuff and characters, that because they're constantly being told that things have to be relatable. Do you think that's true? Was he kind of sneaking in a discussion there about making things relatable?
I mean, I think you'd have to ask him. It's possible that there's like subconscious dust from script development, but I don't know.
No, fair enough.
Yeah.
I'll ask Joe when he's not busy supporting the wrong football team. What was the most fun element of this whole
football team?
Oh, barely even. Yeah, exactly. He can be really horrible about Arsenal, by the way. I should emphasize that. Like, nasty. Yeah. I hope you didn't have to encounter deal with him.
I did.
But you worked with him in Giri Haji, of course. So
he
does have a unique kind of, the dialogue-wise, I felt that this explores different things that possibly couldn't have explored in previous versions. There's quite a lot of swearing, effing and jeffing and C-wording, etc., which I think adds to the texture of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like, I guess it's like a sort of hybrid, you know, sort of English that feels slightly period, and then English that's very modern. And I feel like that, to your sort of accessibility point, like that does sort of let you in, I suppose. And across all the departments, you know, Lisa and Vicky, I remember Vicky talking about like leaning on sort of period accurate silhouettes in the wigs, but also taking influences from like rock and roll or jazz or folk music, and sort of trying to just break it in a little bit to make the world feel sort of lived in.
And you get to call him that foul shit talking bastard, which I thought was a great line.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's actually Schaefer.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
in fact,
interesting.
That whole speech in the church is lifted from the play, and it's. I was really intimidated by that. That's the other thing that I was really intimidated by, because it's tonally quite different, and I don't actually talk out loud to gods. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, how am I going to do it? So I didn't really. I was really intimidated by that.
I think you pulled it off.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Will and Paul, great to see you. Thank you.
Nice to see you too.
Cheers.
That was Will Sharp and Paul Bettany. And now, yes, Kay, it is time for news. What have you got for me?
Okay, so I've got news about The Pitt, which I was reluctant to say because, you know, I'm bearing a grudge against The Pitt because I haven't watched it yet.
I mean, I can tell you all about it if you like.
But anyways, there's been an update with new cast members announced for Series 2.
Oh, tell me, because I haven't seen this.
Oh, okay. Well, I will tell you that Luke Tenney is going to be in it, and he's going to be playing a fourth-year resident named Dr. Cruz Henderson.
Okay.
We have Travis Van Winkle, who will play an aggressive patient named Curtis Larson. Meta Golding is going to play a nurse called Noel? I don't know how to say that. Hastings?
Noel.
I'm going to
say Noel.
Okay, fine. And Christopher Thornton will star as Dr. Caleb Jefferson, a psychiatric attending physician. I just got to tell you, everyone, Boyd's just started yawning.
Sorry.
That shows how interested he is in that.
I'm not sure. Do we know any of those people?
No.
So I suppose it's just actors joining show.
Well, that's good.
I wasn't yawning deliberately. I know.
It wasn't a theatrical yawn.
Yeah, but also Tenney was in Abbott Elementary.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with them personally, but I'm very excited about The Pitt returning. Also, we know when it is returning. It's returning on the 8th of January in America.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, you're just taunting.
Yeah, I am just
taunting.
I'm taunting you.
Yeah,
so it returns on the 8th in the US on HBO Max.
Doesn't help us.
But, so last one I think was like 15 episodes. I think it's a 15 week run. So yes, it is one a week for 15 weeks.
You're telling us about a show that we've
done. I'm coming to it. So HBO Max, I believe now launches at the end of March here in the UK, right?
End of March.
We haven't got a date.
End of March.
There's no date.
We don't have a date, but it's the end of March.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
So end of March. So what will then happen at the end of March? We will get the whole of season one of The Pit in our eyes in one go at the end of March.
Okay.
But presumably, now, and this is going to be the question, will they drop everything from season two of The Pit that has aired and then do it in real time? I'm saying that's a big no. I suspect what will happen is at the end of March, season two of The Pit will start. So you'll get the whole of season one, the first episode of season two, and then 15 weeks from then,
that makes sense.
It will play out.
Yeah.
So we'll be essentially, you know.
I'll just be happy to get the first series, to be honest.
Yeah, we'll be like 3 months behind the US.
Yeah. Okay. Good news.
Yeah. There's a show that's been massively talked about on social media and on the internet called Heated Rivalry, which is a love story. It's a romance between two professional male hockey players. And it was based on a very popular book. And everyone was like, everyone's been talking about it on the socials and saying, when the fuck is it going to come to this country? Well, Sky have snapped
good
it up.
Good old Sky.
Good old Sky. And it's going to be on Sky Atlantic on the 10th of January, Saturday the 10th of January. And it'll be on Now as well. And I think it'll all be available from that date, which is very good news because apparently it's really good.
Apparently this is not train viewing. I've heard.
It's raunch. Described as a steamy six-part smash hit.
It's a raunch fest. Is this film news or is it TV news? I'm saying it's TV news. You know what I'm going to say?
Not a clue.
The Oscars.
Oh, yes.
Are coming to YouTube.
Yes. Mm. Wow.
Now, I don't know how I feel about this because, you know, the Oscars, I'm obsessed with the Oscars and, you know, to the point where, you know, I used to be on the Sky coverage.
Back when you were invited,
in the day. Well, back when Sky covered it and when I was invited, thank you.
I've never been invited.
It then moved to ITV here in the UK and it's still, I think, with ITV and it's been shown on ABC in America for decades and decades. It's been part of their deal. And this is a huge moment, I think, in many ways, a very symbolic moment because the Oscars, pretty much year in, year out, is the second most watched event on American TV after the Super Bowl. So even though ratings, you know, fluctuate and have declined, I think last year it was up a bit.
Were you on the sister show?
I wasn't on the sister show, no.
Okay.
It's a show. Jonathan Ross's coverage. Jonathan Ross hosts the ITV coverage.
Oh, yeah, sorry, that show.
And he has guests on. I haven't been a guest on.
I wondered if that's why the ratings peaked. Yeah.
I see. Oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Because I'm not on the ratings peaked, yeah. Anyway. But I think this iconic, to use the overused word, but in this case it's obviously true, if TV event moving from a traditional US network to YouTube is huge, really, and it's a very interesting move by them. And I think I think it speaks of YouTube's desire to be taken seriously, or more seriously, perhaps, by old school, old people like me, when they've got the whole. I mean, you know, they've got the youth all. They don't need to worry about that. People flock to YouTube, you know, in their gazillions to watch, you know, short form videos of cats, etc. But to have the Oscars, and they're going to have the whole thing—the red carpet, the governor's ball, the this,
brilliant.
That, and the other.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think. Well, I think it's definitely.
I think you embrace it,
and it'll be for free. But you don't have to pay for it or anything. So it'll be for free globally around the world. Now, I wonder how that affects the. I mean, presumably that the ITV coverage will be null and void by then. I mean, this isn't happening till 2029.
So we've got a while.
So we've got a while.
Yeah.
2026 next year. Three years after that. Yeah.
I mean, the machines will have wiped us out by then, so it really doesn't matter.
Oh, great. Thanks. Brilliant. And brackets in other awards hosting news, awards coverage news, Alan Cumming is confirmed again to host the BAFTA Film Awards next year. This year. When's this going out? This year, next year.
Who am I?
This year goes out this year.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. In February next year, a whole next year away. Okay.
Indeed. I bring you now some Sam Claflin news.
I bring you now some Sam Claflin news.
And now we head over
to
Claflin
Bulletin. You're not going to string a sentence together, frankly. Let's not quibble. Yes, he's in a new mystery thriller called Vanished, and it's got a date. So it's going to be on Prime Video in the US and the other territories on the 1st of February. Did I say Prime Video?
You did?
Yes. And we will get it on MGM Plus on the 27th of Feb in the UK. It also stars Kaley Cuoco, and the synopsis reads, when a couple's trip to Paris takes a dark turn with the sudden disappearance of her boyfriend Tom, played by Claflin, aboard a train to the south of France, Alice, Cuoco, is plunged into a web of intrigue and danger, uncovering shocking secrets about the man she thought she knew.
This reminds me of the butterfly incident. We lost it to David for our live show because that's such a generic.
I know.
Plot summary.
I know. Yeah, but yet we will still watch.
Yeah, so. We will still watch it. Yeah. It's true.
We'll watch the Claflin.
Can we say Boots has been cancelled on Netflix?
Yeah, that's a shame, I think.
Which one was that?
That's the one about the gay guy in the army in the Marines, actually, in the 90s, based on a true memoir. Do you know what, though? Sentimentality aside, I think it was a really good show. When it got to the end, I didn't feel like the need to. I don't think it was essentially necessarily much more story to tell. I don't want to sound harsh, but having said that, it was a really good show. And any show that good, you know, you'd hope would be recommissioned. But yeah, maybe someone else will snap out.
Maybe. So yeah, that's been cancelled. But Down Cemetery Road is renewed.
Yes.
For a second season,
which I think is good news. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you finish Down Cemetery?
I haven't finished it yet. No.
Did you?
I didn't.
I did.
Oh.
So there.
And? Captain Smug.
It was decent. Three stars.
Yeah.
So you must be particularly happy about the renewal
news.
No,
I'm happy. It was interesting to me that because this is obviously Mick Herron who did Slow Horses. Slow Horses is a superior, I think, book series. And I think in this case, I think it's a very superior TV series. Because the books do revolve around Emma Thompson's character, but I think Ruth Wilson's character persists. I don't think she's a one and done.
Oh, good.
So, good. Yeah.
I love
Down Cemetery Road will return. We'll be back down Cemetery Road. Also a weird one. There is a Point Break, the 90s Catherine Bigelow film with Keanu Reeves. There's a point, and Patrick Swayze, a Point Break sequel series now in the works.
God.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
That's Point's verdict.
Yeah. And this is the plot. The series is set 35 years after the events of the original film and is focused on a dangerous heist crew with ties to the ex-president's gang.
This is like one of those IP things where, intellectual property things where they could just as easily make a new show about roughly that thing, but they stamp it with an existing IP just to draw attention to it. But
yeah.
I mean, it's not going to stop Keanu Reeves, is it? Or who's the other person?
Well, Laurie Petty. Well, Patrick Swayze's dead.
Sliding no longer with it. So, yeah, I mean, I just don't get the point of calling it Point Break apart from to get attention. Short guess has already worked.
Yeah. We're talking about it, which we wouldn't have done otherwise. Yeah. So clearly it has paid off for them. What else have we got? Kurt Sutter, who abandoned The Abandons, we may know, has got a new show. So he is developing this at the moment. It is an untitled drama, and it is a noir. It is a noir series he's putting together. Yes, exactly.
Noir.
Yeah, an unnamed noir. And all it says here is it's a series. It will transport viewers to 1950s Los Angeles. And there's a private investigator navigating a world of crime and corrupt police officers.
Another generic synopsis. But
yeah, it is.
I like 1950s LA. That might be fun.
It says that LA Confidential, basically.
I mean, it does sound a bit like that, doesn't it? Yeah. So yeah, that's that. And the only other thing I would say is there is a title for the Netflix's. You know the Extraction, the Chris Hemsworth Extraction. And Extraction 2, the movies, where he plays the brilliantly named Tyler Rake and at one point literally kills someone with a rake.
Yeah.
Well, there is a TV series obviously coming from that, but it now has a title and it is called Mercenary, an Extraction Series.
No.
And apparently stars Omar Sy.
What's a terrible... Great. Yeah, he's great.
See what I did there?
Yeah, but it could still be a terrible title.
Yeah, it's about...
In fact, I think it's pronounced C.
Is it C?
Funnily enough, C, it's Omar Sy.
Omar Sy.
I think so. If I can remember. I interviewed him and I think
you're right because I think my instinct is say Sy and I'm always wrong.
Yeah, it's Omar Sy.
We've had that discussion before, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other news?
No.
No other news. I mean, honestly, we barely got through that news. It's been listeners, if you had any clue the amount of giggle breaks we've had, complete meltdowns, inabilities to finish sentences or coherent thoughts, it's been quite extraordinary.
It's been a long old year.
We've been in the studio for 8 hours recording this episode. Yeah.
And has it been worth it? Not really.
Absolutely not. Okay. Let's move on to the reviews. If we get through this, it will be a Christmas miracle. First up this week, we have Mark Gatiss' latest festive chiller in A Ghost Story for Christmas, and this year's version, this year's incarnation, is The Room in the Tower, which stars Tobias Menzies and Joanna Lumley, and is the story of a haunted room in a haunted house that appears in a series of haunted dreams, as recounted by Tobias Menzies' sort of troubled insomniac while sheltering in the underground during the Blitz. Boydie! This haunted mansion, I'm sure, bore a striking resemblance to your own palatial abode. So why don't you tell us why there is indeed no place like home?
Yes. So this is, as you said, I think he's done eight now.
Didn't he do one in 2013, but then didn't do another one until I think 2018 or 19, and then he's done them pretty much every year since.
I think so.
Sure.
That sounds right. Sounds like good research to me. This one is adapted from an E.F. Benson story, and it's like a lot of these one-off stories, one-off ghost stories, it's kind of has a framing device, and then like so it's like a story within a story, and this is like a kind of recounted nightmare within a story within a story, and it all kind of it's being told, the main character is telling this story to a woman he meets in the underground bunker during World War II, played by Tobias Menzies. And he's recounting the fact that he keeps having a recurring nightmare in which he's called to this lavish mansion, and there's this kind of foreboding, weird, freaky-looking family, he presumes, kind of sitting outside this mansion on the lawn. As he approaches, the matriarch, played by Joanna Lumley, tells him that she is reserved for him the room upstairs in the tower, and he finds that chilling, and he's reluctant to go up into the tower and stay there. And the kind of story just involves him coming slowly coming to terms with what on earth is going on in this nightmare, and what the significance of the nightmare is, what the significance of Joanna Lumley's character is, and what the hell is going on in terms of him telling this story, particularly in this setting of an underground bunker during the war. I love these shows. So I'll just put it out.
Some are better than others, though.
Some are better than others. I think this is a pretty good one. I would say
it's my favorite.
Oh, it's your favorite? Mm. Okay. Well, I think there's enough story in it that it feels like it's the half hour running time is exactly right for it. But it's not. There isn't that much kind of excess stuff going on. It's just it hones in pretty carefully on the main story, and there is an absolute creepiness to the whole thing.
Mm.
And Joanna Lumley particularly is horrible in it, and in a kind of quite subtle way. And I think the genius of Mark Gatiss with these shows is that obviously these are kind of fairly low budget, you know, BBC Two one-offs for Christmas, but he makes them. He writes the scripts in such a way, and they're shot in such a way. He directed it as well that you don't even think about for a minute that it's probably it's a low budget thing, because it tells the story in exactly the way it should, and the effectiveness of the direction and of the script and of the performances make it what it is, which is a brilliantly creepy half hour of ghost story fun. And I think it's like I think it's brilliant that this even exists, you know.
Yeah.
Every year BBC commissions Mark Gatiss to adapt one of these types of things into a perfect little half hour of creepiness. And sometimes it is, I use the word perfect loosely, and it's always worth watching, but I do think this is one of the better ones.
Yeah, like, what was last year, the vengeful gargoyles, like the statues?
I think that's right.
And the year before was the mummy?
Oh, I can't remember.
But this is my favourite, because it's lean, it's very...
lean, yes, that's the word. That was
economically put together. There's not a lot to it, but everything about it works wonderfully, from the framing device in the Blitz and the underground to just this hazy, sort of woozy, dreamlike nightmare scenario. And it feels like a dream, and I think they've captured that slightly dissociation that dream narrative. And even it says in that, because no one speaks, like it's silent, because people do stand in silence in dreams. It's slightly weird and disjointed and discombobulating. And it really creeped me out. I thought it was really effective in what it did. I really liked it.
I agree with everything you've said. And I think that, like, the listeners should definitely watch it for all the reasons you've outlined. I don't know, I just couldn't get on board with it.
Because ghosts aren't real?
No, do you know what it is? I had the same sort of like, and I can recognise all the things you're saying, and it has got a fantastic cast and it's well made on the budget and all these things. Yet for me, I had like, I mean, I enjoyed it at first, and then it sort of had the sedative effect of some, you know, the similar effect of someone telling me their dream. Do you know what I mean? As in my interest waned, you know, and I was...
You were just all right, wrap it up. It's
I was
been
a little
half an
bit
hour.
Clock, yeah, I was, but really? I can see the merit of it. This is a me problem, not...
Did you like the previous ones?
I like them to a degree, but I think it's just not my bag.
Yeah, ghost stories. You don't like, not a big ghost story fan.
No,
it's the supernatural
not.
Again, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Mm. Maybe that's my bias playing out. So, yeah, apologies.
Well, if you, unlike Kay, enjoy the supernatural, then A Ghost Story for Christmas, The Room in the Tower, airs on Christmas Eve?
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
Not Christmas Day, Boyd. Not no, Christmas Day.
No, who would
Christmas Eve?
Need to specify that. Get it right. Don't get it wrong. Christmas Eve, BBC Two, 10 p.m. 2025 still.
Next up, we have The Hunting Wives on ITVX, and this is an adaptation of the novel by May Cobb. This stars Brittany Snow, who you may remember from Pitch Perfect and Pitch Perfect 2 and probably Pitch Perfect 3, Malin Ackerman and Dermot Mulroney, among others, and it sees a Boston woman, played by Snow, who is inducted into a toxic circle of Texan socialite wives, known as The Hunting Wives. There is murder, boobage, all manner of sexual deviancy that looks lifted from someone's Pornhub playlist. In fact, when we said we were reviewing this, our very own Steph Seelan basically said, oh, that's porn. So make of that what you will. To that end, we turn now to notorious porn hound and NSFW aficionado, Kay Ribeiro.
Oh, you doofus. She's not wrong. I mean, like, I would describe this as Desperate Housewives with guns and raunch. It's, It's an interesting one. It starts off in that classic way of, so we see a woman being shot in a forest, and then it obviously flashes back 3 weeks earlier, and we get to meet the character of Sophie. She's a PR, played by Brittany Snow, and she's relocated to Texas from Boston with her husband and kid. And she's a liberal fish out of water, right? So she just thinks this life is not for her. And then she meets Margot, played by Malin Ackerman, who I kept on watching, and I was like, now, who is she? Like, I really recognise her. She's from The Proposal.
She's also Silk Spectre in Watchmen, but you wouldn't have seen that.
Okay, fine. Yeah, she's from The Proposal. Her husband's running for governor. And basically, Margot stops her in her tracks, literally, right? And she's in a bathroom, boobs out, and Sophie's like, what the hell's going on? But in time, she becomes quite intoxicated by Margot's lifestyle. She's a socialite surrounded by these other housewives who what's it, the expression that she says? One of them says, we don't have jobs, we wife.
Yes.
And they stand around drinking and go out on the boat with guns. That's their vibe. And, you know, Sophie initially finds it repellent and then, as I say, gets seduced by it and gets seduced by Margot. And we see how that all sort of like plays out. And the whole thing is, how far will she go? Because she's very, like, Sophie as a character, she's the complete opposite, obviously. And she's very sensible. And her husband sort of like has a tight rein on like what she, like her drinking. There's stuff that's gone on in the past that we're obviously going to learn more about. And the whole thing is like finding out how far she'll go the other way with Margot. And also finding out who the hell this woman is who's been shot in the woods. It is, do you know what? I would say it's very watchable. You're not going in there for the sophisticated storytelling. You are watching it if you do watch it because it's daft. And as James says, you know, there's lots of sex.
Because of the boobage.
Yeah,
there's boobage, there's jacuzzi, wanking, there's other wanking as well. There's a lot going on in this. It is a little bit porny.
Oh, not yeah.
It's a lot porny.
It's a lot porny. So
and there's a lot of sapphic action. Is
oh yeah, a bit of that too. There were various points that I had to kind of shield my iPad screen while I was traveling on the train while watching.
Stop
this.
Watching these things on the train, you nutter! You're going to get thrown off.
Yeah, people
your
are like,
train.
Oh, that perv's on here again watching porn on the train.
I mean, like I said, you're not. It's not a high quality prestige drama. Why are we reviewing this, by the way?
Well, it's kind of. It's a major.
Yeah.
You're
American
saying this
drama.
Is prestige drama.
No, I'm about to. Well, I will explain what I think in my review imminently.
Well,
but it's definitely. I'm sure the makers of the show consider it to be a prestige show. It's actually originally made for Starz, right? This is the people need to know the origins of it. And Starz, which used to be called Starz Play here, now no longer exists. But Starz was a in quotes premium cable channel in America that kind of specialized, was famous for raunchy.
Yeah.
Nudity, swearing, and ultra violence in its shows.
That's so where the Spartacus shows began,
yeah,
isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So the Spartacus shows began. But certainly, I'm sure the people who make this show, I'm sure Malin Ackerman considers it to be a prestige drama.
Oh, that's so funny because I think it's quite low rent.
Well, is this your ITV bias coming into play, Kay? Is that what's happening?
No,
here?
It airs on ITV, and we're reviewing, and if you're like, why are we reviewing it? Because it airs on ITV.
Well.
Also, Saturday night
also,
at 9:30.
The only other show to review this week was about witches, and I thought I'd spare you that, Kay.
That's an act
of Christmas goodwill.
That's true.
This is really interesting. Okay, that you.
But why would no? But I know what you mean, because it's got a trashy veneer,
yes.
Right? Because of the subject matter and because of the way it's made, and it isn't. I don't think it is as cinematic as it could have been. And in fact, I think it's disappointing in a way, because in fact, when we had that message from Steph Zeeland, that erstwhile contributor to the podcast, saying it was porn, I was like, oh wow, that's interesting. But the problem with this show is that, production values aside, it is fairly flatly directed, I would say, and shot. It's not particularly visually interesting. It's fine, but it's not particularly
basic.
It's fairly basic, I would say, if you compare it to some other, which I think is what you were talking about, you know, in terms of is it premium peak TV? I think it's trying to be, but it's just failing.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is that it seems to think that, because the subject matter is raunchy and daring, in quotes, you know, suddenly there's a shot of the husband in the pool with two naked women, right? And they think, oh, you know, this is daring and edgy. And as James has been through the various, in quotes, daring and edgy sex moments, but actually it's not as much fun and it's not as daring as it really thinks it is. And actually, and I think like stuff like, you know, the Nicole Kidman show on Netflix, what was that called?
Take your pick.
Yeah, there's quite a few. Which one?
The Perfect Couple, right?
Yeah.
The Perfect
Couple.
This is nowhere near as good as that.
Well, so I was going to say, this feels like if this had Nicole Kidman in the Malin Ackerman role and it's some more energetic direction, you can kind of see that it kind of would be of a piece with that kind of show.
100%, yeah. That's, exactly. Big Little Lies. It's like Big Little Lies. This is like...
not as good.
but not as good. And it's a bit like Real Housewives meets Desperate Housewives, you know. I think this is a post... Real Housewives is a global TV phenomenon, right? Half the people who are in the American Traitors, which has celebrities in it, are from various Real Housewives. By the way, I forgot to mention this in news. You know, Kelsey's thing is mom is in the new series of the American Traitors.
Kelsey who?
You know, the football player, fiance of Taylor Swift.
Oh.
Yeah.
James should... interest should be piqued.
Yeah. I do love a football player.
What's his name, Kelsey?
Travis.
His mum is in the next series of The Traitors US. Yeah, so that's...
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been sidetracked. The point is, this is... In terms of its daring, it's just not particularly exciting or thrilling, even though there is kind of quite a lot of nudity, which even now, in this day and age... It's still a little bit surprising, particularly that it's, by the way, this is directed by a woman, it's written by a woman, but there's definitely more attention paid to female nudity than male nudity, right, in this, from what we've seen so far, in the two episodes that I've watched so far. And it feels quite old-fashioned in a way. It feels almost like something from the 80s that half the female characters get their boobs out, as has been referred to. But the most interesting thing for me about the whole show is that it's quite political.
Yeah.
So you've got this, because the woman who's been forced to move by her husband, so to speak. And I think there's a little hint of coercive control from him, although they don't seem to be fully going...
Well, both of the husbands actually have a nasty side
true.
To them.
Yeah. Mm. So this poor woman's been forced to move from their Harvard / Boston home with their kid to this small town, fictional small town in Texas, where these women are... where the potential Republican politician is holding a fundraiser for the gun lobby.
Yeah, that's Margot's husband.
Margot's husband. And they actually explicitly, it's so unsubtle in its kind of political take that, you know, this poor liberal woman has to survive among these clearly right-wing gun nuts. Not only that, she actually refers to them as Marjorie Taylor Greens, right? What's interesting is Marjorie Taylor Greene is like the icon of right-wing MAGA Trump-supporting women. Of course, she's got completely...
I say less so now, but yeah.
She's completely split from him. So this must have been made, though, intriguingly, when she was still a huge MAGA figure.
Yeah, before all that happened, because that's quite recent.
Yeah, now she's completely split from Trump. So there's a whole political undercurrent, which kind of makes this more interesting than it actually is, to me. But it's definitely taking a stance, and I think this will be frowned upon now. Because they must have commissioned this, 2 years ago? I think it went out about a year ago. We've waited quite a while for this to arrive on UK shores. But I don't think they'd make... I think they would get so much criticism now from a lot of political, from, you know, more right-wing people. I'm not sure this would be made, because it's definitely taking a stance that, look at these, you know, gun nuts and what they're doing, etc. So I thought it was interesting from that point of view, but just nowhere near as much fun as it could have been or should have been, considering its subject matter.
I'm still reeling that you think this is prestige.
No, it's trying to be. I'm not saying it is. Yeah. I think it's failing.
But I think, as with all these things, it's like there's prestige TV that works and prestige TV, I think, that doesn't work. I think this definitely tries to be prestige TV. It definitely thinks it is, but it's a bit of a noble failure. Or not even so noble. It's just a failure.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, it was reasonably well-received in the States. Not failure, yes. I think it was reasonably well-received in the US when it aired. But
Mixed, yeah. But it's one of those shows, I think it summed up for me that there's like at least two scenes where people stumble upon people having sex, right? Yeah. And then they stand there at the window staring at like, you get away with it once.
Yeah.
Twice, come on.
The second time was just
The second time is insane, because she's just told the young guy that they've got to be really careful, and they immediately then have sex in this room in front of the window with music blaring over it,
so she
can't hear the front doorbell going. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
The Hunting Wives, then, which is on ITVX.
It's on ITV1. That's even more. I was explaining why we're reviewing it. It's ITV1 primetime, Saturday night, 27th of December, 9:30.
Oh, all the way through this, I've said it's on ITVX.
Oh, yeah, no.
So I've lied all the
way
through.
Yeah.
Even the intro.
By the way, everything on ITV1 is also on ITVX, so you're not wrong.
So I'm not wrong. I'm 100% correct.
But it's not an ITVX exclusive or anything. This is getting a proper...
You just made his Christmas look.
Yeah, and a lie of omission is what you're saying.
I'm saying of more interest is the fact this is a primetime ITV1 show.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Crazy. So interesting.
Change. It is interesting.
Finally, this week, we have The Lowdown on Disney Plus, which aired in the US in September, and as we said, shot to the top of a lot of critics' shows of the year list. This is a series by Sterling Hayo, and it stars Ethan Hawke as Oklahoma truth-storian Lee Rabin, and he's an intrepid digger-up of dirty secrets and inconvenient facts. There are also Nazi bondage suits, actual Nazis, and an awful lot of books. Boydie, books are, of course, food for the soul, but what is this food for? Give us a lowdown on The Lowdown.
Very good. This is very much catnip for me. This is like right in my wheelhouse. So because I remember reading about this when it came out on FX in the States, and I was like, why hasn't it arrived yet? This is classic Disney Plus behavior, by the way. Months go by without it transferring to the UK to the Disney Plus streaming service, and then suddenly it does arrive. This arrives on Boxing Day, but there was no press release saying it was going to be on Boxing Day. There's the list of, to be fair to Disney Plus, I'm trying to be fair to the lovely publicity people who work there, but they put out a list of all the shows that are coming each month, and it is in that list. But this is such a great show. As
they've
you say,
left it's it under
in,
the tree.
This is I've seen this now in two American critics' number one slot on their favourite shows of the year. This is the year of Pluribus and blah, blah, blah. You know, some absolutely brilliant shows. So it's right up there in terms of critical acclaim in America. And as soon as you see, I can see why, because you've got Ethan Hawke, the great Ethan Hawke, who I absolutely love anyway in everything he does, and is having a kind of brilliant late career renaissance, being in fantastic films. And this show is like a brilliant showcase for him, because he plays this, as you say, this guy who's basically like a kind of a journalist, kind of investigative journalist, who's working for like freelance guy who intrinsically thinks that the whole system is corrupt, that he's living in. He's living in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he thinks like the whole, as I say, the fabric of that whole place, from the rich people who run it to the people who are exploiting, those rich people who are exploiting black neighborhoods and buying up property in black neighborhoods, which is the thing that happens in actual America. And he's investigating the skinheads and what they're doing to the local community, and he's getting beaten up for his for daring
boy,
to challenge them.
Boy, is he getting
them.
Beaten up.
Boy, really, boy, is he getting beaten up, exactly. And then he kind of stumbles across this person who's died, played by Tim Blake Nelson, and he's intrigued, and he finds like their notes, his notes, and there's loads of like books in his area which have a clearly kind of liberal left feel to them. So he's immediately attracted to this mystery of what happened to this guy, who's also secretly gay, by the way, and he's drawn to this mystery. And it's kind of like the whole show, I feel like, it's like a tribute to Raymond Chandler type 40s, 50s,
but it's set in the present day.
But it's got that vibe.
Yes. So you, like, if he wasn't vaping and whatnot, you actually would probably think
exactly.
it's set in that.
Yeah, and if you, you know, do you see iPhones and stuff? I can't remember.
I think so, but like, I mean, even just the existence of vapes would.
And it even gets to the point where he himself talks about the character, Lee Raybon, talks about liking, you know, 40s, 50s mystery novels. And the one it particularly reminded me of, the film that it reminded me of, Raymond Chandler adaptation, is The Long Goodbye, the 70s version with Elliot Gould, which is, what is it, Kay?
One of your favorite films of all time.
I mean, it is absolutely one of my favorite films of all time. Definitely in the top 20. And it's got, that film is a brilliantly laid back, a kind of like woozy, you used the word woozy about something earlier, and this has got a wooziness to it as well. Because you're just kind of hanging out with him, and there is story as well. But I think I think that combination of hang out with this really interesting character, the likes of which you don't see that much on TV now, but has clearly got the influence of Raymond Chandler and these other great writers from the 40s and 50s, and that film, it was in 1973, with a pretty interesting mystery at the heart of it as well. And I just think it's fantastic.
We should mention, of course, Sterling. I think it is Harjo or Harjo rather than Harjo. I don't know why I pronounce it that way. But this is the showrunner behind Reservation Dogs.
Yeah.
Which we really like.
And is critically acclaimed.
Ethan Hawke guest appeared in that series. And that's so they've got this working relationship. And I think he's partly created this for Ethan Hawke and quite rightly.
And he's a great character. And he has a fantastic introduction when he goes in a boardroom full of kind of like, they're property developers.
Yes.
But he just goes in there with his hat on and describes himself as a truth historian. He's obsessed with the truth and he doesn't seem to care how much trouble he gets into. He's perpetually broke. He's generally unemployed. Mm. But, you know, the man does love the truth.
I love him in this. This the underdog taking on the wealthy.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to see that?
Who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah, it's got a lot of, in that sense as well, it's got a lot of Chinatown, a little bit of Chinatown in it, which is very much kind of that kind of what is going on with the corrupt rich people. Mm. The cast, by the way, as well. I mean, Tim Blake Nelson, we mentioned Tracy Letts, who I love in everything, absolutely, absolutely brilliant. Kyle MacLachlan, and others. Keith David, absolutely brilliant, is kind of like.
All the collection of people who are sort of helping him along the way.
Yeah, there's a whole gaggle of people he kind of calls upon. Goes to diners and people, you know, he's kind of, it's just the whole fabric
fellow
of it.
Fellow shopkeepers.
Yeah.
It's quite, I mean, it is bold, the B word, which is bold. It's absolutely gonzo, like it's mad. But it's also, exactly as you say, it feels like a pulp crime paperback that you find at an airport. And it has that whole vibe. And that's 100% deliberate. Like, it's almost an homage to all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really good stuff.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So?
That is The Lowdown on The Lowdown, which airs on Disney Plus on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Unheralded. Boxing Day, not Christmas Day.
Yes.
So, you know, watch it over Christmas.
So, you know, watch it.
Is that
how you're ending?
That's a recommendation.
What a way to go out. I'm very tired.
I'm very, very tired.
Oh, we all need to have a lie down separately.
Okay. What else is out this week? Let's have a look. Obviously, there was the witch show that we mentioned, which was Sanctuary: A Witch's Tale, which airs on Netflix, also on Boxing Day. But as my gift to UK, I didn't
Thank
make you,
you
watch
James.
That. boy, there's a lot of other Christmas stuff on, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, do we have to go through it again?
Probably not. Why don't you pick out pick out three great scripted things that are also out this week.
Amanda Land,
the Christmas special, which we're going to be covering on the final podcast. Well, I guess it's not, because we've also got the review of the year.
But this
Christmas Day podcast. We have a Christmas Day Pilot Plus dropping on Christmas morning into your stocking, where honestly, if we can barely function today, I do not know what we're going to be like tomorrow when we record that. So, brace yourself.
Oh, God, are we doing that tomorrow?
Yes.
Christ.
Yeah, it's endless, boys.
It never ends.
It really is endless, isn't it? Are we stretching into New Year's Eve with this bit?
Go for it.
Well, the Here We Go special.
Yes, I've watched it.
Here We Go. Yeah, you see that. Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't mention
that. I can't believe I forgot. No, because this is Christmas stuff, so I didn't.
Right. Yeah, I mean, who knows what we should be.
Who knows what's going on?
I don't know. It's too confusing. There's a thing called Stuffed on the Tuesday the 23rd, which does Ghiz Khan, and that's like a one-off family romp where he's been laid off, and I think he's supposed to be taking his family to Lapland, and then he has to work out how to fulfil the dream of going to Lapland. But that looks pretty good. So, yeah, those would be my picks of the scripted offerings this Christmas.
But everyone should sit down and watch Amanda Land, of course.
Christmas Day.
For sure, yeah. Spoiler for tomorrow's recording of Christmas Day's podcast.
I'm not saying it's any good. I'm just saying as a people, you know, should think about that.
Okay. What is our pick of the week?
Oh, absolutely, The Hunting Wives. Not really. The Lowdown. Sure. Yeah.
The Lowdown. And that is it for this last regular podcast of 2025. We're all just going to collapse in a heap. Just honestly.
My bags are so big now, eye bags, that I can barely see through my eyes, especially if I smile.
So, yeah, it's quite extraordinary. So apologies if there's been a slightly anarchic / shambolic episode of the podcast.
Yeah, it's not
Please leave us a 5 present rating or just send us Christmas presents. You know, either is fine. I'm receptive to presents. Please send them into the office.
Some nice lint for James.
Some lint, yes, yes. A great big dairy milk bar. That would be great. And we will be back in your ears if you're a Pilot Plus subscriber, and you all should be. And if you're not, why not? And
what a great last-minute gift for all the people on the 21st of December thinking, oh, God, I've got to hit the high street, get some stuff.
Oh, I can't get something posted. It's gone the last shopping day for Christmas.
Just go online.
That's it.
And
subscribe to Pilot Plus.
For your friends, families, and foes.
And enemies, yeah, 100%. So that will be going out on Christmas Day. Then the Review of the Year podcast will go out on the 29th. And then the first podcast back in the new year will be the 5th of January, and we've already recorded it.
Good shows.
Wow. So yeah, we're ahead of the game. We're doing well. We're starting as we mean to go on in 2026. Please follow us on social medias if you'd be so kind. It is at Pilot TV Pod, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, and at James C. Dyer. We're done. We're finished. That is it.
I mean, for today.
Well, I mean, yeah, until tomorrow when we record the next podcast. Yeah, but that
what
is
we doing
it.
On that one?
That is the Amandaland Christmas special, Boydie.
Yeah.
Honestly.
We've taken all week to try and get to grips with what the hell we're doing each day.
Yeah, it's
a
struggle.
It's the last one. It's Amandaland. What a way to go out.
What a way to go out. Yeah. What a way to go out. Okay. Happy Christmas, one and all. Do you want to wish everyone a happy Christmas? Wish everyone a happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, everyone. Thanks for listening. More importantly, thanks for listening. And I hope you have a very happy and healthy Christmas.
Yes. As do I. Pod bless us, everyone. Pilot out.